Welcome to If You Love This Planet. I'm Dr. Helen Caldicott, and in this program we talk about the greatest medical and environmental threats to all life, such as nuclear weapons and nuclear power, global warming, ozone depletion, toxic pollution, deforestation, and many other social and political issues that relate to global well-being. So if you love this planet, keep listening. Hello and welcome to If You Love This Planet. My guest today is a repeat performer, Arnie Gunderson, an energy advisor with Fair Winds Associates, a company which provides research, analysis and paralegal services around environmental and energy issues. Arnie has a 39-year history of nuclear power engineering experience, and during his nuclear industry career, he managed and coordinated projects at 70 nuclear power plants around the United States. He currently speaks extensively on television, radio, and at public meetings on the need for a new paradigm in energy production, but specifically relating now to the Fukushima disaster. An independent nuclear engineering and safety expert, Arnie provides testimony on nuclear operations, reliability, safety and radiation issues to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, congressional and state legislatures, governmental agencies and officials throughout the US, Canada and internationally. Arnie Gunderson, welcome again to If You Love This Planet.
Hi, thank you, Helen.
Now, Arnie, I want you to tell us, the audience, what happened yesterday at the North Anna double nuclear power plant some few miles from Washington, D.C.?
It's about 80 miles outside of Washington, D.C., and it's an old reactor. It was begun in the early 70s and completed in the late 70s, so it's been operating now for about 30 years and designed 40 years ago. Yesterday, we had a large earthquake, the largest earthquake on the east coast of the United States in 70 years. It was a Richter 5.9, the plant was almost right on the epicenter of the earthquake. The plant was about 6 or 7 miles away from the epicenter. It shut down automatically.
Now, what does that mean? Explain to the audience what shutdown means.
The control rods, when the earthquake hit, shortly after the earthquake hit, the power lines were disrupted, and the plant had no place to send its energy, so it automatically shut down. And what that means is that the control rods fall in from the top and stop the neutron chain reaction from occurring. So that stops about 95% of the heat from the plant, but there's still 5% of the heat that continues even when the motor's turned off, if you will. And this is from decay heat from radioactive isotopes that are left behind. So when you shut a nuclear reactor off, you don't really shut it off. You stop the continuing chain reaction, but that, like Fukushima, we all learned there that there's this decay heat that that hangs around for a long time. Well, the offsite power was destroyed, and the only thing left were the diesels, and they turned the diesels on, and they all started up, which was good. And then one of them was shut down. It sprung a water leak and couldn't operate anymore. There's a question about whether or not the leak was caused by the earthquake, or whether the leak was a leak that just hadn't been detected earlier. But in any event, one of the four diesels broke, but the others continued to operate. This morning, the offsite power line was restored, and now the plant has electricity flowing into it to keep the nuclear reactor cool.
What caused the external electricity supply to abort?
Yeah, that's a good question, because people in the area didn't lose their electricity.
Yeah.
The best information I've gotten is that there was a problem in the switchyard. So it was right local to the plant. The vibrating from the earthquake was significant enough that it caused arcing in the switchyard, which caused the power, the offsite power, to fail.
Now, go on.
No, that seems to be the most reliable estimate of what happened, because, like I said, all of the surrounding communities continued to have electricity.
Is there any indication that the earthquake itself damaged the reactor, the piping, the concrete contain, the whole thing? Is there any indication?
They have said there's no independent verification, but the company that owns the plant has said that there are no major piping problems in the plant. There have been no failures of any radioactive pipes. That was as of this morning. But that has not been independently verified. We're relying on the company that owns the plant to tell us that.
And I think, too, Arnie, at about six other plants in the near vicinity, they declared a level one emergency. Is that correct?
Yeah, what that is it's a when you feel the earth shake beyond a certain agreed-upon number, you're required to bring in extra staff and walk down every single pipe in the plant to make sure that all of the pipes haven't twisted or bent. And so those six declared unusual events and continue to run. But North Anna is still down, and their executives have said they've made no decision on when it will start back up.
They're still shut down. It must have given... I had to get a wry grin on my face when I heard about this, because it couldn't have happened closer to the capital of the U.S., Congress, the White House, and it's kind of God saying, okay, folks, let me show you a little bit about what's happened at Fukushima.
You know, the lesson here, but Congress was on vacation this month, so
yeah.
I don't think they got the lesson. But there is a lesson here. Actually, there's three times now in the last 6 months, plants are built to something called a design basis. You know, you agree that such and such a wind, such and such an earthquake, such and such a tsunami will hit the plant, and you design it to that particular event.
Mm.
But in three times now, we've had excess of the design basis, or right up to the design basis of the plant. And that's not supposed to happen. The design basis is supposed to be high enough that you never get near it. You know, the tsunami at Fukushima was obviously higher than the design basis by 5 meters. But here in the States, we had a flood out in the Missouri River, and I'm sure you've seen the pictures of one of the power plants there, completely Fort Calhoun, completely surrounded by water. That shouldn't happen. Now, that's what you design as your worst case, and the worst case happened, which says that there's likely to be something even more severe that you haven't planned on.
Mm.
And the same with the same with North Anna. North Anna's design basis earthquake was a 6.1, and this was a 5.9. That's too close to comfort.
Yeah, well, the thing I was thinking yesterday was these blasted reactors. I mean, if there's an accident in a coal-fired plant, so what? But, you know, if there's an accident in a reactor, God help us all. And the consequences are so vast and so catastrophic. Well, they're nuclear volcanoes, these things. So let's go on now to Fukushima, Arnie. You've been the major person really commenting upon the Fukushima ongoing disaster. Would you like to give us now a brief sort of précis of where things are at now in Fukushima?
Let's start on site and then move off site. On site, the reactors continue to emit radioactive gases. Significant quantities of radioactive gases. The last number I saw was a gigabecquerel per day.
What's a gigabecquerel?
A giga is beyond a billion. There's like 12 zeros in a giga.
And what's a becquerel?
A becquerel is a disintegration per second.
So we've got over 12 billion disintegrations per second of radiation being emitted per day at the moment from Fukushima.
Right, right. That's on top of, you know, whatever has come out in the first 140 days.
Yeah, but how do they know that? Are they actually measuring that, or is that just a guesstimate again?
That's a great question, Helen. They are estimating based on the exposure they're picking up at the fence post, and they're back calculating based on that. It's and given that it's Tokyo Electric doing the calculation, I don't have a lot of faith in it.
I wouldn't trust them as far as I could kick them.
I know. So in any event, they continue to emit a large amount of radioactive isotopes, especially cesium, but you know, the whole witch's brew, from strontium to some of the lesser known ones, polonium and things like that. So they are continuing to emit gases. Now, we don't see them because it's summertime and the air is warm. Mm. And they are frantically trying to build tents over the reactors to trap the gases inside. Now, that's a good solution in that it will protect the workers on site. But they're going to take those gases and they're going to pump them out the stack. So the gases are still going to be released, except at a higher elevation.
Oh, my God, are they? Oh, so the tent means nothing.
Well, the tent is just to allow the people on site to have lower exposures, which is a good thing.
Yeah, but they're still going to emit the stuff.
Yes, right.
At a a higher elevation, and that means it'll spread further.
It'll disperse further, right.
Yeah.
So, you know, for the people on the in British Columbia or Alaska or, you know, the west coast of the U.S., you know, up in Northern California, we are seeing rainouts periodically, and they are from Fukushima, but the question is where? Are they coming from the plant or are they coming from Japan itself? And I'll get into that in a minute.
Okay.
But the plant is continuing to emit gaseous radiation that goes airborne. It's also, there is a piece of good news. They have gotten a purification system in place to purify the incredibly contaminated water. And this means they don't need any more water. They can recycle and pump back into these reactors the incredibly contaminated water after it's been cleaned up. So they are no longer creating more radioactive liquid. They're creating more radioactive waste.
And what will they do with the filters that trap this radiation?
Yes.
What will they
Yesterday, Helen, one of the filters got so radioactive it was 300 R an hour.
Oh, my God.
And they said, you know, that's lethal in 2 hours. So
it's lethal in an hour.
The filter was taking that radiation out of the water, which was a good thing, but where is it going to go? Into the filter. So the Japanese will have, you know, they're trading problems. They're not creating any more water, but now they're creating an enormous number of filters full of highly, highly radioactive waste.
Yeah.
And now the problem is, where do you store that?
Yeah.
And it's the concentrations of cesium, and cesium is a powerful gamma ray emitter. Where do you store it? Short term on site, and then where are they going to put it? At the end of the day, when they go to button this plant up forever, do they bury it in the ground? I don't know. But it is good news that they have been able to filter out the water and not require any new water from off site. Remember, these plants were not designed to work this way. The fuel was not supposed to fail. The reactor wasn't supposed to have a hole in the bottom of it. And you were to recycle the same water round and round and round, like the cooling system going through the radiator in your car. That was the plan, but of course, when the meltdown occurred, and the vessels failed, that no longer could be true.
So, I've got a question, Arnie. Why can't you use highly radioactive water to recirculate back into the reactor and keep it cool? Does it not work properly as a coolant when it's very radioactive?
It would work great as a coolant. The problem is that nobody could get near the pumps to run it.
Oh, I see.
The pipelines would be so radioactive.
Oh, I see.
Right.
Okay.
So they couldn't do that. They had to take the radioactivity out of the water to pump it back in to become more radioactive.
Okay, fine. Yep.
So the fuel pools are, Unit 1 and Unit 2 fuel pools appear to be stable and not a problem. There hasn't been a picture of Unit 3's fuel pool in months, and I find that very strange. On our website, Fairwinds, we've postulated that the fuel pool in Unit 3 had a criticality and is distorted and damaged, which accounts for plutonium being found off-site. Well, the NRC just 2 weeks ago came out with a report that said, no, the fuel pools are fine. But that doesn't make sense because there's plutonium in large pieces, centimeter-sized pieces, off-site. And how can that be? They're saying, when asked in a meeting 2 weeks ago by a civilian, you know, how can this be? They said, well, the reactor core failed. But that's even worse because the core is inside the containment, and to get pieces the size of a centimeter or so out indicates that the containment is breached and the reactor has breached. And if the Nuclear Regulatory Commission is correct, and I'm wrong, it's actually worse than what I've been postulating.
Yeah. So it's either worse or they're lying.
Right. Mm. Right. So you have a way with words, Ellen. The three reactors and Unit 4's spent fuel pool continue to pump out gases, and the three reactors and Unit 3 and 4, Unit 3 and 4's fuel pool are still in a precarious situation. If there's a serious earthquake, you know, a 7.5 or an 8, those buildings are questionable integrity now, and you know, I've told my friends, if there's a big earthquake, make sure those buildings are standing. Because if those buildings are not standing, leave.
Leave Japan. Well, yeah. What about the fallout coming over to America? I've got a family with a beautiful baby grandchild in Boston. You know, and I, when the accident first occurred, I thought I'll fly the whole family out to Australia because we don't get the fallout down here in the Southern Hemisphere. But what if something really disastrous, such as the one you just mentioned, happened? What about North America and the fallout, Arnie?
It would be significant, you know, especially because the fuel pool has plutonium in it, and you know, you've discussed the dangers of plutonium.
The reactors have plutonium in them.
Right, right. But you kind of hope that you can cool the reactor. But Unit 4's fuel pool is quite precarious. Mm. And Tokyo Electric has gotten underneath it and put in large beams to keep it from collapsing.
Mm.
But they haven't made the building any stronger. They just made the bottom of the swimming pool stronger.
So they didn't...
You just got to pray that there's no... that there's no earthquake.
Well, they didn't reinforce the building, only the bottom of the swimming pool. Now, So let's get on to the general disaster in Fukushima and Itarati and other, and even Tokyo. You sent me some information today, Arnie Gunderson, that they're finding extremely high levels of radiation in hotspots in many places throughout Japan, including Tokyo.
Well, the Japanese were very surprised today. They found a hotspot more than 300 kilometers away, 480 kilometers away from Fukushima. They found an incredibly high area of radiation.
Where?
I'm sorry. It's in Bloomberg is covering it, and as a result, the government has said, "Wow, we need to put more monitors out." And that's the problem, is that they have not been monitoring adequately. There's lots of problems. While I'm breathing a little bit of sigh of relief for the Fukushima site itself, Japan just hasn't gotten the message yet about the severity of the problem. You know, they found now cattle that have been fed a straw that was not contaminated are becoming contaminated, and they're saying it's from the air. And that can happen. I think you know about that from the days on Three Mile Island.
Oh, sure. Radioactive iodine and other elements are inhaled into the lung, absorbed through the lung and the alveoli into the bloodstream. So you don't have to eat radioactive food. It can get in as gaseous emissions into your lung and into your bloodstream.
So the cattle within 100 kilometers of the site, even if they're eating clean grass, are becoming contaminated because the air has contamination in it, and that's a concern. I'm sure you know there's been tea found as far away as 100 miles south of 100 kilometers south of Tokyo. So that's essentially 250 kilometers from the reactor, and is contaminated. There's a especially severe swath heading up from Fukushima to the north and west. And the Japanese have admitted that nobody's going back for generations. I just read a report today that said that if they tried to clean it up to lower the population's exposure so they could go back home, the exposure to the workers would be so severe that it wouldn't reduce any morbidity. You're going to kill the workers versus kill the population. So they have announced that there are some areas within 20 kilometers, pretty much all the area, and then a wedge heading up to the north and the west is going to be unlivable for, they've already suggested, for decades.
Well, I got an interesting email from the International, or you sent it to me, I think, International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War today, Arnie, and they make some very important recommendations.
I have read that. I know the document you mean, and it's circulating widely on the internet. There's a beautifully poignant video out on the same topic. It's about a 20-minute long video, very powerful, about how beautiful Fukushima was, and the prefecture was.
Yes, and this is what the International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War say. There should be detailed spatial mapping of radioactive contamination in Japan. That has not happened. They say that the management based on actual levels of contamination and anticipated total exposures, both external and internal, not simply the distance from the reactor, should be taken into account. In other words, people are living in hotspots. And, Arnie, in Chernobyl, the government was pretty proactive and it moved people away from really hotspots. But here, they're just totally passive. They're just letting people live in areas which are terribly dangerous. And I don't know how many people are going to develop cancer as a result of the inactivity of the Japanese government. Can you explain what's going on, Arnie Gunderson?
I wish I could. I think there's a denial of the severity of the accident by the elite in Tokyo, and the business community and the government appear to be ignoring and denying the severity of the problem. There's a calculation out today, Helen, that says some of the towns in that northwest corridor received 50 R. The people in those towns each received 50
rems
of radiation, which is almost a 50-50 chance of a cancer in your life.
Oh, for sure.
And yet that just came out now almost 6 months after the accident.
Oh, my God. And that's probably only external gamma. That's not measuring their internal doses from inhalation and ingestion of cesium and strontium and radioactive iodine and tritium and carbon-14 and technetium-99 and, lots of other things, right?
Yeah, you're correct. Now, what they're also seeing is now that the ground is contaminated, guess what? Rainy season's here. It's running into the rivers.
Yeah.
Not just near Fukushima, but throughout Japan, and is now running into the ocean.
Mm.
So the contamination is in the ocean, not just in the 10 miles around Fukushima, but now up and down the coast. So we're seeing measurable contamination even in the Sea of Japan now, that's been measured by the Chinese. The Chinese are concerned that Fukushima is affecting their water supply as well as others.
That's right.
Now, what's happening in what will happen, and I think the most devastating thing is going to happen next month, and that's the rice harvest. You know, it's their, not only is it their staple crop, but it's a cultural icon. And I think they're going to find a significant fraction of their rice is contaminated. I frankly don't think they're monitoring anywhere near enough.
No.
And the monitors, I'm not sure, are actually telling the truth either. But they're going to find contaminated rice. And what do you do with it? It's with a 30-year half-life. You're not going to let it sit around for 300 years until it all decays away. So you're going to burn it.
Yeah, but go on. Yep.
And you're going to burn the rice straw that's also going to be contaminated.
Yeah.
So what I see now is a second Fukushima occurring. You know, basically, the gases that came out and settled on the ground are now going to be burned and thrown back into the air and waft into other places in Japan and across the Pacific into British Columbia and Oregon and Washington.
So it's transferal from the contaminated rice, the rice straw, from the contaminated sewage systems that they're getting, and contaminated wood and leaves, and they're burning it. And so they're just transferring it up into the air to be lofted over the Pacific and over Japan to fall in hot spots all across the Northern Hemisphere.
Correct.
It's dispersal.
You know, I'm going to change the topic here on you just for a smidge. I've been saying that it's going to cost $150 billion to clean up this mess in Japan. And I'm beginning to think that's too low. That doesn't include the site. I think the site will be another $50 billion.
Mm.
And TEPCO will go bankrupt in probably everything but name. But basically, TEPCO's assets will clean up the site. But the rest of Japan is costs having to be borne by the Japanese people, by the Japanese government. There was a bankruptcy just this week of a Japanese cattle farmer. And he was a large cattle farmer, but not a giant. And he lost $5 billion, U.S. dollars, in his bankruptcy because now nobody's buying his beef.
Right.
Well, if just one cattle farmer can lose $5 billion. It's clear to me that $150 billion is not enough to clean up the country.
But they can't clean it up. That's such a misnomer. They can't clean it up. Mountains and streams and trees and forests, and you can't clean it up. It's like Chernobyl. You can't clean it up.
They keep talking about the sunflowers. You know, let's plant sunflowers.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so now you've got radioactive sunflowers. What are you going to do with them?
That's right. What do you...
yeah, yeah.
Or bury them, or, yeah.
Yeah. It's a monumental undertaking to... I don't think some areas, I agree with you, Helen, especially that northeast quadrant, you're not going to be able to clean up. But but some areas you can probably knock down by a factor of 10... the cesium. Now you're still going to have lots of cesium, but you've reduced it by a factor of 10. There's 90%.
But where do you put the stuff you've just removed with which is full of cesium? Where do you put it?
Right.
So you can't get rid of radioactive waste. That's the thing that people have to understand. And the other thing, I think, the final thing we should discuss now, Arnie Gundersen, is where is the international community on this? Where is the International Atomic Energy Commission? Where is the World Health Organization? Where is the ICRP? Where is the Nuclear Regulatory Commission in America? What the hell do they think they are up to? And I say that with a degree of annoyance, if not anger, as a physician.
Well, the International Atomic Energy Agency had a meeting, an invitation-only closed-door meeting last week. Here they are talking about we need to be more transparent.
Yeah.
And what did they do? They invited all industry experts into a room, closed the door, and didn't let the press in. You weren't invited, were you? I wasn't.
No, is that so? If I'd known, I would have broken in.
That was in Geneva. So, you know, the industry is hiding behind closed doors. The ICRP model...
International Commission on Radiation Protection, yes.
predicts very low cancer rates, but I don't believe that that's correct based on the Chernobyl data.
Mm.
And so I think the Japanese government is hiding behind the ICRP model and claiming that this really isn't going to be bad. And then the other thing they've done is they've raised the number. So now they're saying, well, you're safe because the number we had last year is now 20 times higher. So you're safe because you're below the new number. But it's not, they're playing with the numbers as opposed to trying to solve the problem.
Oh, Ronnie, it just makes my heart bleed. It's like you're in the middle of a match and then you change the rules so that the losing side can win.
That's a wonderful analogy. It's a sad analogy, but exactly right on. I think what is happening here, Helen, is that the people are getting angry at the government, which is unique for the Japanese.
Right.
And they, they're buying Geiger counters like crazy. Some video stores are now renting Geiger counters for the day.
Yeah.
And people are doing their own measurement because they don't trust the government.
Well, we need the Japanese people to have a revolution, right? I mean, in psychology, to rise up against their government. But, you know, it's too late anyway because the cancers are going to appear anyway.
My estimate is that the lung cancers in the next... In northern Japan, lung cancers are going to increase by about 20-30% as a result of Fukushima.
In the next couple of years.
It takes about 5 years, 3 to 5 years. Right?
Yeah,
that will be the first, and then we'll see the other longer ones.
We'll see the leukemia in the children, and we'll see the deformed babies and the babies with low IQs. I mean, it's just a repeat of Chernobyl.
Yeah. Oh. We will, if your readers keep their eye peeled on the Fairwinds website, that's Fairewinds, Fairwinds, as my wife and I have a website that we try to keep posted. There likely will be some stories about contamination coming out of Japan next week would be interesting and just increase the general knowledge of the severity of the problem.
Yes. Well, on that really, really sad note and rather depressing note, Arnie Gundersen, we'll bring this interview to an end. I'm sure that ongoing events will cause us to repeat another interview. And I thank you so much, you and your lovely wife, Maggie, for the work that you've been doing, Arnie. And I would just like to appeal to the audience. Arnie does this all for free. And he was a whistleblower. He was charged by the nuclear industry. He lost his house. And he's just doing this out of the goodness of his heart, as is Maggie. So if you could possibly help to support them by going to fairwinds.com, that would be very greatly appreciated. And I thank you very much, Arnie, for this interview.
Well, thank you very much, Helen.
That was Arnie Gundersen from Fairwinds Associates. Now we're going to move to Japan to speak to Aileen Miyoko Smith about what is happening on the ground in Fukushima. She has been active in the anti-nuclear movement in Japan since 1982 after a year of interviewing residents living around the Three Mile Island area after the accident in 1979. She is currently the executive director of Green Action based in Kyoto, which aims to stop Japan's plutonium utilization program and rapidly phase out nuclear power in Japan. Aileen, welcome to If You Love This Planet.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, Aileen, to get your background, you're basically Japanese, but you lived for a while in the United States, is that correct?
Well, I was born in Tokyo. My mother's Japanese, but my father is American. And I grew up in Japan, and then when I was a teenager, I grew up in the U.S. And then I've been back and forth, but mostly in Japan ever since.
So,
and every day I'm just speaking Japanese, so even if I have an American accent, sometimes it's difficult for me.
How long did you live in America as a teenager, Aileen?
Let's see, 8 years.
Right, so they were quite formative years. And did you go to high school there and college?
I went to high school in the Midwest, very sort of secluded, all Republican. I didn't meet a single Democrat in 8 years.
Oh, my God.
And then a couple of years of college on the West Coast, I went to Stanford, and I dropped out. But mainly what we did at Stanford, of course, it was during the Vietnam War and a lot of protest.
So you were educated in the democratic process, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
Yes. Now, how did you get involved in investigating the Three Mile Island accident?
Well, my first husband and I, W. Gene Smith, we lived in Minamata, that's in southern Japan. The huge mercury pollution, industrial pollution tragedy outbreak. And after we completed the book, that was in English, we wanted to get it translated into Japanese, and my Japanese wasn't good enough at that point. The translator, Nakao Hajime, was very involved with the anti-nuclear movement in Japan. And after the Three Mile Island accident, he and colleagues who had already filed a lawsuit to try to stop a nuclear power plant in Japan, they went to Three Mile Island and interviewed people there and found out all sorts of things happening. And I heard about it. And so after the second trip, I went with him. And then we actually lived in Middletown, which is right near Three Mile Island, well, right there at Three Mile Island for a year.
Yes. Tell me, Aileen, what did you find? What were the main features that you found in the population living around and near Three Mile Island?
Well, what we found is that, first of all, everybody, scientists, the media, everybody was saying that it was a near disaster, but of course it was prevented, and the amount of radiation that got out would not be any level that would affect people. However, when we went there, we found a lot of people saying, for example, the air tasted of a metallic taste, or some people said that they actually felt a tingling that even went through them. And the farmers, the local farmers, noticed changes in the animals. And after several years, the veterinarian there said that there was more cancer in the animals. And so what we did is we tried to find out more about these phenomena. And those are the people that we interviewed so that we could get more details about those things happening to people and animals and the nature around Three Mile Island, including birds disappearing, bird deaths, etc.
Well, what pathology did you find in the people? What did they report? Did they report evidence of acute radiation sickness at the time, nosebleeds, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, or subsequent cancers? What did you find? And, of course, it's not a proper epidemiological study, but what were your impressions, Aileen, of the population there?
Well, we found all the things that you mentioned, except we didn't hear about nosebleeds, which actually in Fukushima is quite noticeable among children now, the nosebleeds. But at Three Mile Island, one, of course, is this strange metallic taste.
Yeah.
This was very widespread. And I think that that's significant because, for example, Tibbetts, when they dropped the Hiroshima bomb and they turned the plane, the Noage, away from where the place where they dropped the bomb, I mean, they veered away, there was a taste of lead, a metallic taste in the mouth. That's reported. And also atomic soldiers during the 60s and in going in, for example, after the bomb in Bikini going in, they had a metallic taste, many of them. So I think that that's a significant marker. We don't know exactly why that happens, but we did hear a lot of that at Three Mile Island. And then again, this feeling of tingling through the body, but changes in the vegetation, some of the plants growing really huge. And the animal deaths were just suddenly, at the beginning, it was just suddenly animals being found dead. Then there were problems with the birthing. The first spring, that was very noticeable. And the veterinarian who'd been there for years and years said that there was definitely a problem. And then cancers in animals several years after the accident. But for the people, people said various things, but there was one area where it was so noticeable, the testimony of of a couple of the people there was so significant, like feeling very hot from inside and, of course, the taste in the mouth, coming back from evacuation and finding their animals dead with their eyes whited out, et cetera, quite dramatic. And the person, that family, insisting that, that cancer had increased among people. And then it looked evident that on this small country road, it really had increased. And our investigation led to people, mainly the women, housewives around the area, going door to door on that country road and finding increase in cancers. And then that led to epidemiologists, Steve Wing, looking into it and actually finding that there was an increase in cancer. So there is evidence that there was a cancer increase at Three Mile Island as a result of the accident. But it's not, like, recorded as widespread. I mean, there's not been a proper study done to find out the actual real pattern of that. And there was also an increase in infant deaths after the accident, actually. But the numbers are so small that it's really difficult to get a significant,
Yes, and also that the government authorities have not followed the people up. I think they followed them up till 1986, which is only 7 years after the accident. Then they stopped, and the fact is it takes cancers, 5 to 60 or 70 years to declare themselves post irradiation. And so the study, as you say, Aileen, has never really been done, which is really criminal. There has been a major cover-up. And in fact, in my book, Nuclear Power is Not the Answer to Global Warming, I've documented Steve Wing, who's a wonderful epidemiologist, his studies, increases in lung cancer and the like in that population, and the cover-up conducted by General Public Utilities, which owned Three Mile Island, and also Hershey's Chocolates, which is only 13 miles from the reactor. And the milk in the cows around the reactor had so much radioactive iodine in it that Hershey's I got the data from the lab that Hershey's used from a whistleblower, had so much iodine in it that they powdered the milk and waited for 6 weeks for the radiation to decrease and then used the milk for the chocolates. But a huge amount got out. The radiation monitors just went off scale within the first few minutes. So nobody knows how much got out. And there are various estimates, of course, the government estimates, the nuclear industry estimates are really low. But others who really know what they're talking about, like Carl Z. Morgan, the founder of Health Physics, and others estimate that huge amounts of radiation got out. So let's now move to Fukushima, because you are Japanese, Aileen, and you've been intimately involved in following Fukushima. Number one, did the people around Fukushima, have they reported metallic tastes in their mouths? And do you want to then extrapolate the stories that you've heard and what you know now about the ongoing accident at Fukushima, which is now 5 months old?
Yes. One is, it's very important that unless you actually interview people, often people do not talk about these kind of problems that they have. However, nosebleeds are so evident among children that people are talking about their children's nosebleeds. I mean, for example, there were two busloads of Fukushima citizens that came down to Tokyo to negotiate with the Ministry of Education on May 23rd. So that's a couple months after the accident, a little bit more than that. And right in the middle, one of the women just started crying, and on her cell phone she just found out that her child outside of the ministry waiting outdoors started the nosebleed again. And she's going like, she's crying like, again, again, nose bleeding, and she rushes off. That scene left an impression on me. The mothers are being told, no, I mean, that couldn't happen with the kind of levels that you're having right now. And the women are saying it's definitely different, the kind of nosebleeds the children are having. As far as those other symptoms, I haven't been involved with interviewing people at Fukushima except just going on one trip there just for that purpose. But during that one trip, I interviewed five people, and two people did have a metallic taste. And the way they described it, it's just unbelievable, because it's been years back at Three Mile Island where someone would sit there and say, I haven't told anybody this, but I have this weird taste in my mouth, and I haven't said it to anybody because people will think that I'm weird, et cetera, et cetera. And the same expression, the same words came out the other day in Fukushima. One woman said that it was the very first time she ever told anybody, and she's telling me this. But so unless you ask, you know, you don't find out.
That's right.
Something can be quite prevalent, and actually, unless you really go in and ask, you don't find out. Another person had it and kept insisting, you know, doesn't the air taste weird? And other people didn't notice. And then when he was back from evacuating, another person, a friend with him, said, no, you're right. We walked out. We're getting closer to Fukushima again, and I do have that taste, that same thing that you were talking about.
I want you now then to present a sort of global perspective. Just enumerate for me and the audience, Aileen, all your thoughts about Fukushima to this point in time, if you would, please.
The population of Fukushima is approximately 2 million people, and of those, there are 385,000 children. What is significant is that the problems that have been surfacing, it's really citizen-led, that citizens have pushed for more investigation. For example, right after the accident, this is an example, I found out about, you know, being able to get five radiation monitors to Tokyo, and so through Nuclear Information and Resource Services in Washington, D.C., they were sent, and I facilitated that. I sent it to a group in Tokyo who'd been working on the Fukushima nuclear power plant issue for years and years, addressing the seismic problems there at the plant, meeting with Tokyo Electric, discussing how Tokyo Electric was manipulating the figures to show that that any potential earthquake at Fukushima would be small. Anyway, that group is called Fukuro no Kai. I made sure that the monitors got delivered. There are five monitors. And then what they did is they ran with it. They took it to Fukushima and gave it to citizens there. And instead of doing that kind of regular monitoring of let's leave the monitor in the same place and look at it once a day, et cetera, those parents took those monitors and went to the environment where their children were exposed, like the schools in Fukushima, and started getting radiation readings, and they were really, really high. And because of that, they took that to the prefecture and said, look, you have to survey all the schools in Fukushima, the school grounds, and find out what kind of levels there are. And as a result of that, where citizens pushed for surveying, all the schools in Fukushima prefecture got surveyed, 1,368 of them, and really high levels were found. The kind of levels were that 75% of the schools had radiation levels that exceed levels which trigger designation of a workplace as radiation controlled. That would mean that that individuals under 18 are not legally permitted to enter.
What levels and were they? Can you give us the levels?
They were high.
What?
In other words, that led to Japanese provisional standard of no more than 3.8 microsieverts an hour. But the levels there were high, you know, more than more than 1.5 microsieverts in many areas. But some places, in some ground areas of the playgrounds were really high. I mean, like, you know, not 3.8 microsieverts, but 40, 50, higher in some spots.
And these were Geiger counters, so they were only measuring gamma, Aileen. They were not measuring alpha or beta. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Go on.
So then that led to, okay, you know, there has to be some standards created. And then unfortunately, then the Japanese government said they raised the standard from, the standard is 1 millisievert per year is the national standard. That's what's allowed for the general population. and they raise it 20 times to 20 millisieverts a year for all of Fukushima. That's everybody, adults and children, even babies and pregnant women. And that's what we've been protesting, to try to get that standard changed back to a low standard. But that allowed a lot of the schools to continue operating. And so at the beginning of the accident, millions of families, you know, took their children out. Many of the children were taken out of Fukushima by their parents. But then the school year starts in April, and they demanded the school year is going to start on time. All the children have to come back, and all the children came back and were exposed then to these high levels. So parents kept demanding that there has to be decontamination, and that led to attempting to decontaminate it to the schools. And, of course, it's not just the school where the children are exposed. It's at home.
Of course.
Going to school,
it's everywhere. It's where they live. The whole of Fukushima Prefecture is contaminated.
Exactly.
And in various hot spots, it's worse.
Exactly. But the thing is, the schools were the places that were monitored thoroughly. And so we were addressing that because that represented the environment, the contaminated environment of that those areas where those children were living. And so we started saying something had to be done about it, and what was done was decontamination, and then, of course, it doesn't really work. But
well, how do they decontaminate the schools, Aileen?
Well, they used bulldozers, and they took off the topsoil, which was very high, and then what they attempted to do is then take off the next layer that was cleaner and then put back the highly contaminated soil back, and then the cleaner soil on top, which means that kids were, again, you know, just standing on...
Oh, my God, how ridiculous.
Yeah.
I'm trying to diagnose what's wrong with the Japanese system, and I've read, and it seems like it's still basically a feudalistic system where everyone's basically very polite, and if they do something wrong, they apologize deeply, but doesn't mean to say that they'll change the behavior, and that people are loath to demonstrate or remonstrate against the government because it's kind of still a feudalistic system where everyone follows the law and they're very law-abiding. But so and the government is hand in glove with TEPCO, which is the Tokyo Electric Power Company that owns the Fukushima reactor. And so the whole thing is totally and utterly corrupt and paralyzed and seemingly not able to move. In a country where, the only country where people have experienced the results of intense radiation at Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and people are still getting cancers from the radiation from those bombs, it seems most extraordinary to me, Aileen, that there is this sort of nuclear paralysis in a country that has experienced, the only country that's really experienced, the pathological effects of nuclear radiation.
You're absolutely right. I mean, and, you know, Japan is very misleading. I mean, people are so polite, you think that it's nice here, and it's not. And this was the case before, and now it's just getting exposed to the world. I know one foreign journalist was talking about this place as kitty fascism. You know, kitty is that famous sort of like cute little cat kind of mascot doll that's really popular. But it has that face. But the reality behind that face is very, very different. And so people are fighting in Fukushima. I want to point out that now, you know, like well over 10,000 children have been evacuated by their parents. There's so many families that are split now where the family has decided the mother will take the children outside of the prefecture, but there'll be no income. Unless, you know, the father stays on inside the contamination and continues to work. There are house loans that have to be paid. That's like a full, huge rent, and people feel, you know, they can't just dump that and have that burden and then go try to look for work another place in Japan. So right now those families are split. I mean, how long will this go on? And so we're demanding the right to evacuate. I would like to point out that we really need... more criticism from the international community. And one thing that that we have done, these are the this is the Fukushima network for saving children from radiation and other NGOs in Japan. We have issued a statement to the Office of the High Commission for Human Rights, this is the UN, asking them to come and investigate. What we would like to do is have that statement go out to the world and people see it and know what's happening in Japan. Also, the other thing that we have done is just now translated the survey that's about that has just started for Fukushima Prefecture residents. It's called the Prefectural People's Health Management Survey. It's really bad, and the person heading it is Dr. Shunichi Yamashita, who's quite famous for his really terrible comments about radiation. And what we need is for the world to see that happening and criticize and critique what's going on in Japan. Dr. Shunichi Yamashita is heading this study, and these are quotes by him. For example, in March 21st, he says, "The name Fukushima will become known throughout the world. Fukushima, Fukushima, Fukushima. Everywhere Fukushima. This is a tremendous thing. We have even surpassed Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Now the name Fukushima will ring out with more preeminence throughout the world. A challenge is an opportunity. Now is our biggest opportunity ever. Fukushima has claimed fame without so much as moving a finger. There's no way we can let this opportunity pass by." This man is heading the health survey. Another quote from him, "The effects of radiation do not come to people who are happy and laughing. They come to people who are being weak-spirited." And here's another quote, "There's no health difference between microsieverts and 100 millisieverts of radiation exposure." These are people that are heading the health study now, and we need the international community to come in and critique this.
You do, and I want to thank you very much for coming on and telling us about the distress that the Japanese citizens are experiencing at the moment. Our hearts go out to you, Aileen, and to all the Japanese people. It's a really terrible, invidious, insidious situation. I think the whole world needs to wake up and learn from what is happening in Japan, and also we need very strongly to pressure your government, and I agree with that. So on that note, we will leave this interview, and we look forward, Aileen, very much to speaking to you in the future, for this accident is not stopping and is continuing and is ongoing.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening today. There'll be more on the catastrophe ongoing at Fukushima and the lessons that the world must learn about the devastating consequences of nuclear power and indeed of nuclear weapons, as nuclear power is the errant child of the nuclear weapons industry. Please join us again next week on If You Love This Planet. Thank you for listening today. Goodbye for now.
You've been listening to If You Love This Planet with Dr. Helen Caldicott. This program is broadcast on community radio across the United States, including our host station, KPFT Pacifica, Houston, Texas. This program is produced and engineered by Jazz Williams, co-produced by Scott Powell, and our publicity and outreach are coordinated by Amanda Bellerby. To listen to previous shows or to make a donation, go to our website, ifyoulovethisplanet.org.